Mr. Shaw, real too. We were talking about your time at HMS Fishguard at Chatham, and we're going through the morning routine, a typical day early on in your training. You said that the duty petty officer had come round.
That's right.
And what would happen then?
Well, then he'd shout and bawl, get everybody up, you see, and then we'd all troop into the. We weren't marched in, you went into the washroom. Which was quite good, actually. There's some showers in there, which was better than some of the modern ones, if I remember rightly. But anyway, not a bath, shower. They were very good. And we'd have a wash, and then we'd all go over to the dining room, which was, well, not too far away. There's a big playground in the middle, you see. Anyway, the dining room was handy. So we'd go there. And let me see, now what time would breakfast start? 7 o'clock, I think. And of course you had what they put in front of you.
And how was the food served up to you, and what was it like?
Well, the food was served up by people who were very often pensioners who'd been in the Navy, and they were doing this job. And the food was, passable, but not...
What sort of thing would you get for breakfast?
You might get a boiled egg, or you'd get some bacon and egg. And the bacon was usually always streaky stuff, but never and with a bit of tomato. But it was all sort of hanging. I mean, if you got it in a hotel nowadays, you'd probably immediately go and see the manager. But we ate it. I mean, we didn't worry about it. We ate it, and. Most of us survived anyway, and don't think we had toast, I can't remember, but we had bread, and...
What would you wash it down with? Was it tea?
Tea, that's it. You didn't have a choice, it was tea, you know, great big urns of tea, you see.
And was there enough?
Oh, yes, yeah. Oh, yeah, there was enough. But lots of people perhaps didn't fancy. But, I mean, I managed to eat most of what was put in front of me, so that was it. So, yeah, there was enough. Now, let me see. Now, after that, we'd all fall in on the parade ground. And we'd march down to what they called the factory. It's a training establishment where you do your... And, of course, when we first started, none of us had ever used a hammer or chisel, as you can imagine. And the same applied to everybody who just... And, of course, the instructors, and most of those were ex-naval people, and they would tell you how to use a hammer. And but after the first day, you can imagine everybody's hands were bleeding, blistered, and we had to do this for ages and ages, and it was...
How did you learn to use a hammer and chisel? What were you making or doing?
Well, they'd be showing you first. Well, they had a standard test there. Eventually, in the first, you know, the first 6 months, where you had to fit a hexagon steel. You had a bit of raw steel, and then you had to use a hammer and chisel to chisel this into a hexagon. You had a gauge to sort of see if you could get it correct or not. And then you had to usually cut a channel with a smaller chisel through there so that you could fit something in. And, of course, as I said just now, none of us were hard. Well, I don't think any of us had used a hammer and chisel before. So by the time we got to the end of it, mind you, we were getting the hang of it. I don't mean the hang of doing the job properly, but... the hang of using the hammer and chisel. And then what they did after that, at the end of this test, and you were getting towards the end of our first 6 months by then.
This was a trade test.
Yeah, that's right, trade test. They would then sort, there were four trades. There was a fitter and turner, and the majority of people were fitters and turners. Coppersmith, engine smith and boiler makers. Well, the coppersmiths, engine smiths and boiler makers, you probably only get two or three of those each. And the majority of the people were fitters and turners. And they decided by looking at the test, you know, the jobs we were doing, whether anybody was suitable for carrying on as a fitter, and practically everybody was, but I was one of those who wasn't, actually. And then they...
So what were you selected as?
Boilermaker, and there's nothing to do with making boilers, and it was a complete and utter, when I look back on it, waste of time, because it hardly applied in the Navy. Now, coppersmith, yes, that was all right. And one part of the boiler making study was all right, because we were taught welding, gas and electric welding, you see. Now that would have been something useful, but unfortunately, yeah, go on.
Well, hang on. So what else did you learn early on, or was it just the hammer and chisel for the first 6 months?
To start with,
that's all you did for 6 months.
That's it. Yeah. Then at the end of that, you're all allocated your different trades, you see. So that was the A class bit finished.
Right, hang on a minute. So you'd spend all day, basically every day, doing this hammering and chiselling.
You'd go. What happened was that we'd go down. We'd fall in after breakfast, and I think it was about 7:30, and then we'd all march down. Not just the one class. The whole lot, J class leading the way, all marched down. We had to go down, we'll forget how many steps, hundreds of steps, and onto the main barrack ground, all around the barracks, I think.
And where was it you were going again?
We were going to St Mary's Island, the mechanical training establishment, machines, etc., etc., were all established there, you see. And it would take us half an hour, I think. We had to march, you know, swinging your arms, and you had the officers walking alongside, and the POs, and the chief shouting and bawling. And then, at, I think it was 11:45, we'd get there, and we'd start at 8, or just after 8, and then I think about 11:45, we'd march back again, right up to the Fiskard block again, for lunch, or dinner, as they called it then. It wasn't called lunch.
Now, what would you get for lunch?
Well, the main thing that people really enjoyed, mainly, was soup. The soup was good. And the rest of it, well, it was potluck sort of business.
What was so good about the soup? What type of soup?
Well, I suppose because it was a good mix. You know, a nice sort of... not everybody enjoyed it, mind you. But I think the majority of people, and this carried on through the Navy, actually, the soup was one of the main things. You know, vegetable soup, all sorts of, nothing refined about it, but it was the...
And what else would you get with it?
Well, you'd get as much bread as you like. Well, not as much as you like, but great big chunks of bread. And then, after that, you'd get a...
You wouldn't get stews and, you know, veg.
Well, I don't remember a stew, but you'd get a reasonable sort of a meal out of it. But it was never, you know, sometimes you'd get beef and some, and in the summer it might be a cold meal. But it was never, when it was a hot meal, it was never, it wasn't what you call a two-star Michelin. It wasn't cooked all that well, but nevertheless, most of it survived, you know what I mean? And so, and then you have a sweet, and the sweet was usually something, we used to make up all sorts of comical names for it at times, you know, what it was sort of, how can I put it, some of us would eat it and some wouldn't, and the custard, for instance, would usually be fairly solid, but nevertheless, it was edible. So that would be the dinner, and then, march down again.
All the way back to St. Mary's.
Oh, yeah. And we'd finish 4:00.
So another 3 or 4 hours of hammering and chiseling.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Was there nothing else to do? I mean, weren't they teaching you sort of some basic engineering?
Oh, yeah, we haven't got to that yet.
Right.
We haven't got to there. So you come back and you'd get back, what? 4:30, and then you'd have what they call tea. Well, that was really the bare necessities, you know, a cup of tea and a piece of cake. You might have some jam, they might have jam on a plate, and that was it. Then, I'm not sure about getting the times dead right.
But it's all right, you're doing great.
At about 6 o'clock-ish, you would go down again into the barracks and do your hour and a half schooling.
Now, what was that?
And that would be, to start off with, it would either be maths. We did up to calculus in maths, although I've forgotten all about that. Or engineering. Or, that applied to the ERAs, but don't forget they had electrical artificers and ordnance artificers, so they wouldn't be doing engineering, they'd be doing electrical stuff. But anyway, so we all went to school then for about an hour and a half. Now, I'm just trying to remember how many times we went to school during the week. Two or three times.
And what level was it? I mean, could you cope with the maths and...
Oh, yeah, it was a pretty high level, actually, but most of them were... Yeah, most of them could cope with it, you know.
And they were started to teach you the basic principles of engineering as well?
Yes, oh, yeah, that's right. What happened there, mainly, was that you're issued with the folders, dockets, you see, and you take them down, and then one of the engineer officers would come into the class, and he would, starting from the beginning, describe what was what, and tell you open your docket at page so and so, and run through what you were supposed to know, etc. And this is how it went on, you know, all the time. And we also did. I'm just trying to work. We also did physical training in the evenings. So I don't know whether it was once or twice. Anyway, the whole 5 days...
How much PT was it? How difficult was that? You were a bit of a sportsman.
Well, I was all right with it. It was useful.
What sort of thing was it? I mean, was it...
Running, jumping over box horses, and neck rolls. That's the one thing I wasn't very good at, neck rolls. For some reason or other, I always went up rigid, and I could never relax. But that was climbing up ropes and leapfrogging over one another, and boxing. I was never very boxed, but they did that as well, you know, boxing and running, of course, etc. You know, all the sports. And, well, the thing was, when we played football against the civilian teams. You know, the Kent Junior League. And in practically every game, you could bank on this, in the last quarter of an hour, the other side would run off their feet. And that's when we would score all the goals, because we were the fittest. And that was mainly we didn't have any choice, you see. And that was it. Oh, and cross country running. Oh, dear, I forgot that. We hadn't been there. We hadn't been there more than a couple of weeks when we had this colossal cross-country... It wasn't a race. It was you weren't racing against anybody, but you just did it. And it was about eight or 10 miles. And, I mean, and hardly any of us had ever done that before. And, of course, Harper was stopped to walk. But the trouble was... There were lots of physical training instructors and whatnot out with you, and they'd be shouting as soon as they saw somebody sitting down, they'd get her up, you know what I mean? And this went on, and that was... But despite all that, there were one or two chaps who took to it, and there were some really good... But I was hopeless at the long distance, and so were most of us. We used to try to dodge it if we could, but we couldn't.
What about drill? I mean, by drill, I mean, you know, foot drill.
Yeah, that's right. We did that there. And with rifles, we had a whack of that. And that was with a chief gunner's mate, you know, shouting and bawling at you and put your cap on straight and all this rubbish.
Did you do much drill?
No, not a hell of a lot, because it wasn't our department, really. But we did enough. They had to because you had to know what was what, you know what I mean? So we did enough, yeah.
So you could do, you know, form fours or whatever.
Oh, yes, all that nonsense, yeah, definitely.
Did they teach you to shoot the rifle?
Yeah, oh, that was the thing, I was hopeless. I'm glad you mentioned that. This was really... They had a shooting gallery in the block. It was a bit underground. I think, if I remember rightly, it was underneath the... where we ate. Anyway, it doesn't matter about that. And we had a chief gunner's mate would take us all down there. Not all of us, you know, it wouldn't be all. It'd be about a dozen at a time, you see. And you had the targets all set up all the way along. And then you'd lie down on the floor, they'd hand you the gun, and he'd tell you what to do and all the rest of it. And I'm not... And the thing was, you had to just squeeze the trigger. Because if you pulled it, and I could never do that. And you've got to believe this, that the other half the other people were in stitches laughing, but the chief gunner's mate wasn't. I'd be aiming at that target and hit the one up. Honestly, I was hopeless at that, and the pistol. But they did it. They did that. Some of them, it's like everything else. Some of them were quite good at it. And I wasn't. I was hopeless.
How did you get on with the instructors? I mean, in two ways. There's people, and were they good at teaching?
Well, most of them, unfortunately, I would say three quarters of them would try to get... What's the right word? To get their own back up. Because they knew that we're all going to finish up as chief POs, and they didn't like that. They didn't like it at all, because usually they had to do years and years before they got promoted. And they didn't like the idea of us, when we finished our training, we'd have a leading, and then after a year you'd be a petty officer, and maybe after two or three. So they try to get their own back in advance, if you get what I mean. Not all of them.
And how would they do that?
Well,
the bad ones.
How would they do it? Well, I'll give you an example. We weren't allowed to wear shoes, not even a shore. You see? Now, one or two of the lads, they got over that by the window at the back of the dormitory, and of course very often the local girls come round, and if you had a girlfriend, you'd lower a pair of shoes down to her, right? And then in a attaché case. And then you'd go ashore, but you've got your boots on. See, they come along expecting and make sure your hat was on straight. Now, on this particular occasion, I was going ashore, and I was accused by the... They always had a petty officer there to see you going ashore, as well as the officer of the watch and all this. I was accused of having this case lowered out with shoes in, you see. And there was no sort of ifs or but about it. And then I had to see the officer watch. I was in the rattle, run in.
And had you?
You see? No. So, I stood in front of the officer watch, and he said to me, "And what have you got to say for yourself?" And I was, in those days, I had a bit of a... I mean, I wasn't afraid of anybody, funnily enough. I didn't care whether they were admirals or what they were. And I said, "He's a bloody liar." Well, it was unheard of for anybody to say that. And this petty officer went red in the face. And luckily for me, the officer of the day at this particular time was an engineer officer. I mean, they varied. Sometimes it was a physical training officer, but he was... he believed me. And it turned out that it was somebody else. But this chap, because he didn't like me, and this is the sort of things they would do to get at you. And of course, if they didn't succeed there, you know, we had what they call these grommets in your cap. Do you know about that?
Well, if you explain it.
Cane. Well, in a naval cap, and they had a little cane grommet all the way around, and it made it look all... But we... You know what it's like when you're young? You don't want to be like that. You want it to be... And we used to very often shorten the grommet so that you could pull your hat down. Well, you weren't supposed to. And if they couldn't get you on anything else, then they'd come out and say, take your cap off cap, and they'd check to see whether you'd this sort of thing. Petty little thing. But don't get me wrong, they weren't all like that. But there were enough of them like that. And as I say, I always remember this incident because I was quite...
did they know their job? I mean, you know, were they good at teaching?
Well, the only people who really had to teach us anything was something like the gunnery people. Now, some of the other petty officers, they didn't teach you anything. They were just there to keep control. You with me? Discipline. So they didn't teach you anything.
Now, what about your fellow trainees, the other boys? How did you get on with them? There's 70-odd in your class.
Oh, yeah, I got on all right with practically all of them. But obviously, now and again, you're bound to have a bit of a squabble. But generally, you could say that we all got on reasonably well. And there was no... If there was any pilfering or anything, it was practically unheard of.
What about bullying?
Bullying, that came... That was done by the senior classes. Imagine, similar to a school, you know, in the olden days where the prefects, the J class, when you got to J class, they had a habit of, they'd shout out to any of the people who just joined, that would be A class, and they'd open up the window and bellow out to them, and you're supposed to run over. We didn't, we tried to run away, you know, very often they'd run after you. But that was just that sort of thing, and some of them were real bullies, you know, the real McCoy. And when they finished their training, the J class people, after they'd done their 4.5 years and they'd finished, and the day before they were due to all leave, they'd have A class out on the parade ground in the middle of the night, you know, midnight, out of their beds and taking the mickey and making them do all sorts of things and beating them up if they didn't do it and this was the routine, see, and that's what it, and so that's what happened. But that gradually came to a grinding halt. And by the time we finished our training, and we were J class. One of the junior classes had, we used to call it the big class. They had about twice as many people join as normal, you see. So instead of just the J class coming out on the parade, we had all the senior block was out on the parade to deal with these people. And they wouldn't come out of there. This is a real peculiar incident, this. They wouldn't come out onto the parade ground. So in the end, one or two of our people had to break in through the roof, and it was a real shambles. And eventually, there was such a hullabaloo that the master-at-arms, the officer watch, and somebody else in the barracks was up, and they were threatening everybody, but we all told them all to get lost. They were going to bring the Marines up, but they didn't. But we finished, we left then, you see, so we didn't know what happened afterwards. But to get back to the bullying part, yeah, there was a lot of that, really. But it did, peter out.
Now, what about in the evening? I mean, after you'd finished, your lectures, what would you do in the evening? I mean, was there anything for entertainment in the barracks?
They had...
canteen or anything?
Canteen was only sort of buying chocolates or ice creams. There was no sort of alcoholics or anything like that. Oh, and incidentally, you weren't allowed... This always dumbfounded me, and yet I didn't really think about it. The penny didn't drop for years and years. We weren't allowed to smoke until we were 18, but the law of the land allowed you to smoke at 16. So how did they get away with it? Why wasn't there one young lad like me, kick up a row about it and sue them. The Admiral. I mean, 18, you weren't allowed to smoke till you were 18. I mean, who decided on that? The Admiralty couldn't count.
I mean, and did you smoke?
They're not the government, was it?
Did you smoke?
Yeah, oh, we all smoked, nearly all of us smoked like chimneys, you know, to start with. And you had your roll your own, it was ever so cheap, you see. And I got caught out three or four times for smoking, and I was running around the playground with a great big rifle over your head, like this. This was after, in the evening, after you'd done everything else, this was all extra. And all your leave stopped, not your leave as much, because when we were in the first year, your leave was up at 9 o'clock in the evening. That's if you went ashore, I mean, you're only allowed ashore about one. Except, I think on a Saturday you got an extra hour. And then when you'd been in the second year, it was 10 o'clock. And when it got to the final 6 months, and everybody, average age was 20 by then, oh dear, it was wonderful. You could stay out until 11 o'clock at night. And if you were in one of the sports teams, cricket teams, football, you got an extra hour. You needn't come back till midnight. We all thought that was great. Amazing, that was. So they very often would have a... Not very often, but now and again, they'd have a local dance, which finished at 12. So we all had to leave at 11:45 and run back to make sure we got in on time. But
what would you do when you went out into Chatham then?
Well, there wasn't much you could do, really. Pictures.
Did you drink?
I didn't. Some of the others did, but not. Yeah, nothing. Nothing special. And they had this dance occasionally, and I didn't dance much, but I might go. If you actually lived, I mean, one or two of them lived in Gillingham and Chatham. Not many. But if you did, they were allowed a weekend. They could go out on the Saturday, and they didn't come back until the Monday. No, was it Monday morning or Sunday night? No, Sunday night. They had to be back Sunday night. But apart from that, the normal routine was you had to be back, as I say, at 11, unless if you're in one of the football team, cricket team, running, tennis. They had a lot there, rugby, hockey.
Well, tell me about
everything.
The sport. What sport did you do at Fishguard? We'll go on to that now.
Well, football and cricket. That was my two main ones. I got in the first. Well, funnily enough, it was almost a similar thing with the football. They had 6 11s there, you can imagine, see, briefly. 6 11 one week, the 5th 11 the next week, the 4th. Rapidly up to the 2nd 11, and then hold on for a while until I got into the 1st 11. With the cricket, now how many cricket teams did they have? I think they had four 11 cricket teams. And I got into the 1st 11 there eventually, but the last two seasons, you see. So I did all right for that. Nothing else. I wished I could have played tennis, actually, but I was hopeless at tennis. But you.
And when would you play this? Was this a week on a Saturday or Sunday?
Saturday and Sunday, mainly. It was usually...